Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Black holes, the cosmos, space and time travel, science and technology, brought to you by theoretical physicist, futurist, popularizer of science, and world-renowned author, Professor Michio Kaku,
at GCNLive.com.
This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. On Science Fantastic, every week, we profile some of the most amazing developments in science and technology, science that affects your life and changes the way you view the universe. Well, with us today is an authority on asteroids. Well, if you watch the movies like Deep Impact and Armageddon, you're familiar with the danger that asteroids pose to us, given the fact that we think perhaps the dinosaurs were wiped out when an asteroid plowed into Mexico 66 million years ago. But what about the science? The science of asteroids. We have visited them now. We're taking samples from asteroids, and some people think we should at one point even mine the asteroid belt. Well, with us today to discuss asteroids is a leading authority on asteroids, Dr. Clifford Cunningham. He's a research fellow at the University of Southern Queensland all the way in Australia. And he's also the associate editor of the Journal of Astronomical History and Heritage. So, Clifford, glad you could be on Science Fantastic.
Yes, thanks for inviting me. It's great to be here.
Okay, first question for you is, when you were a youth, when you were a kid, what steered you in the direction of science and eventually astronomy?
Well, I decided to become an astronomer when I was perhaps 6 or 7 years old. I believe I'd seen a program on television about astronomy, and that's what piqued my interest in it in particular. By the time I became around 11 or 12 years old, I'd acquired a small telescope, and I was especially interested in asteroids because they moved. I regarded the stars as quite boring because they were in the same place every night. But the bright asteroids, which I could see in the small telescope, moved every night, so I found them exciting. And back then, there was the American Ephemeris and Nautical Almanac, which published the positions of the brightest asteroids for each day when they were most visible in the sky. And I had no money. I couldn't afford to buy the book. So I went to the library, and I photocopied all the pages regarding the asteroids, giving their positional measurements in the sky. And then with my telescope, I used it to actually observe Ceres for the first time, probably back in 1965.
Now, I understand that a lot of the incredible discoveries made about asteroids are done by amateurs. Amateurs scouring the heavens late at night, doing the yeoman's work in the cold weather of tracking these asteroids and finding out how dangerous they might be. So, if you are one of these people who want to track asteroids, what kind of telescope do you advise that they get? What kind of instruments would you need to become an asteroid hunter and one day perhaps have an asteroid named after you?
Well, when I was doing the research for this book, I specifically got an interview with Roy Tucker, who discovered 709 numbered asteroids, making him the one of the most prolific asteroid discoverers of all time. And he was observing from a telescope here in Arizona, where I was living up until just a few days ago. I'm now in Texas. And Mr. Tucker was very adept at finding really exciting asteroids, including an Aten asteroid, which is the Earth crosser. And he used a telescope way back in the 1990s, a Celestron C14 with a CCD camera. And then he advanced to that with more extreme equipment, which most people would not be able to do. He was a professional engineer at observatories, so he knew how to operate the big telescopes and how they worked, and he was able to build his own equipment and detectors. These days, the most valuable, I think, telescope to get would be the Unistellar telescope, which is being promoted by Dr. Marchis, Dr. Frank Marchis. He discovered the first trinary asteroid, and this telescope is now available. It's only become available within the last year or so, and with that, they think that really significant discoveries can be made by amateur astronomers, which we tend now to prefer to call citizen astronomers, since it's a less derogatory term. For a lot of years, amateur astronomers were given a bad rap, and the term was considered to be somewhat derisive. So we tend to use the term citizen astronomer now, and a lot of major discoveries are being made by these people.
And speaking about nomenclature, first of all, let's back up a bit and tell the audience, what is the difference between an asteroid, a meteor, and a comet? Because they're used interchangeably, but they are quite distinct. So what's the difference between an asteroid, a meteor, and a comet?
Yes, well, in essence, asteroids are small objects composed of silicates or metal that can be found throughout the solar system. Comets are composed of silicates and ice. The major distinguishing factors between asteroids and comets are their source regions and the presence or lack of ice and frozen gases. Meteorites, on the other hand, typically originate from either asteroids or comets, although a few actually come from the Moon or Mars. The Moon and Mars sometimes get hit by meteorites or meteoroids, or comets or asteroids. All sorts of stuff is flying through the solar system. It's like a pinball game out there. The things are just whizzing around all over the place, and all the planets, including the Moon and Mars of the Earth, are being hit all the time by these objects. So the asteroids, comets, and meteors are now collectively known as small bodies of the solar system. So they're all interlinked, and they're all just called small bodies collectively, to make sure that you know, whatever happens out there is being done by a small body, and we sometimes can't distinguish whether it was done by an asteroid or a meteoroid or a comet.
Okay, now your book excels in history, so let's go back a few centuries. During the time of the Greeks and the Romans, they were familiar with, well, Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn. Later on, astronomers realized that there were planets beyond that, Uranus, Neptune, and even Pluto was discovered. But tell us about the discovery of the first asteroid and what a sensation that caused.
Yes, it was really quite remarkable. It happened on the first day of the 19th century, January the 1st, 1801, and it happened in Palermo, Sicily. And the observatory is still there. The instrument that was used to discover Ceres is still there, and I was lucky enough to be given permission to see that a few years ago. For a variety of reasons, the observatory is closed to visitors. Only staff is allowed to go in there and see the telescope, but I was granted a special dispensation by the governor of Sicily to go in and have a look at it a few years ago, and it's really quite dramatic. It's a 5-foot vertical circle made by Jesse Ramsden in England, and it was purchased by Giuseppe Piazzi, the director of Palermo Observatory, and he was using it not to find new objects, but to find the positions of existing objects, namely the stars. So he was creating a star catalog, a very laborious task. And in that, he was assisted by...
Okay, Clifford, we have to take a short commercial break. But after the break, we're going to continue the discussion of your book, Asteroids. What are they? Where do they come from? And how dangerous are they? And one day, can we mine them? Once again, you're listening to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Give us a call if you want to get on 100 radio stations that carry Science Fantastic. The number to call is 612. 864-8135, and maybe you can get on national radio. Give us a call with your questions.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Are you watching your retirement savings melt away right in front of your eyes as the economy crumbles? Well, if you have an IRA, 401k, or similar account, I need to tell you about a better way that was revealed by a Wall Street Journal best-selling book. Simply put, you can opt out of the insanity and convert your existing retirement account into the most stable physical asset in history. Physical gold and silver. Plus, this conversion might qualify you for an IRS loophole that could save you even more. Today, Advantage Gold is giving away a completely free audiobook version of the national bestseller, Gold is a Better Way. Just text the word better to 48542 to get your copy. That's BETTER to 48542. By the time you drive home, this simple step may save the future value of your retirement. It's not too late if you're not prepared. You can take action now and claim a free copy. Text the word better to 48542. That's BETTER to 48542. Message and data rates may apply.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor.
No other network provides the level of customer service we do. When it comes to radio advertising, we are your one-stop shop. And no matter how big or small your business is, we can help. Email us at advertise@gcnlive.com and an experienced advertising executive will help you take the first step towards driving more customers to your business or website. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
Brought to you by Professor Michio Kaku. This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. With us on the line is Clifford Cunningham. He's a research fellow with the University of Southern Queensland in Australia. He's also the associate editor of the journal, Astronomical History and Heritage. And we're talking about his latest book, which is, I think, one of the definitive books on asteroids. What are they? Where do they come from? Will one day we be able to mine them? And how dangerous are they if one of them falls in your backyard? So, Clifford, when we last left off, we were talking about the year 1801. Ceres, the first asteroid, was discovered, but then a host of these things were discovered after that, and people began to realize, oh my God, there could be thousands of these things out there. So tell us a little bit about the history of how we discovered asteroids.
Well, in the 19th century, there were just the first four asteroids known from 1801 up to 1845. And then the fifth one was discovered, and eventually hundreds more, especially when photography came into use in the late 19th century. At that point, hundreds were being discovered, and then thousands. And now it's up to almost a million that are known and numbered. So it's a tremendous rate of discovery now, And it's just going to increase as larger telescopes are being built that will be dedicated to searching for asteroids. And, of course, spacecraft are also finding more asteroids as well. So in the 19th century, it was really a drought for several decades, from 1807 to 1845, when only Ceres, Pallas, Juno, and Vesta were known. And there was a lot of controversy about what Pallas was when it was discovered as the second asteroid in 1802. Most people thought it was a comet. And it took quite some time to figure out that it was another object that was designated as an asteroid by William Herschel. And mind you, he did not create that word. It was created for him. So it was not actually known for 211 years who created the word asteroid until I made that discovery a few years ago. And that was friend of his was a musicologist, and Herschel was actually writing a poem about the universe with this musicologist, Charles Burney Sr. And his son was Charles Burney Jr., an expert on the Greek language. And it was between the two of them, Sr. and Jr., that the word asteroid was created for William Herschel in 1802. And that's why we call them asteroids today.
And the question is, of course, where do these asteroids come from? There's something called Bode's Law. It's not really a law, but it does give you a rough approximation as to the radii of the orbits. And according to Bode's Law, there's something missing. Something missing between the orbit of Mars and Jupiter. And some people think that's the remnant of a failed planet, a planet that never quite formed. And we have the debris called the asteroid belt. Has that theory held up? Do people still believe that the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter is the remnants of a failed planet?
Well, the hypothesis that was most prevalent in the 19th century is that of an exploded planet. It became a suggestion early in the 1800s that a planet between Mars and Jupiter exploded and created all these fragments. And almost every book that was published in the 19th century either embraced this totally or at the very least mentioned it and suggested it as a major possibility. But we don't believe it was an explosion at all. It was simply the fact that the planet Jupiter had such an enormous gravitational influence on that region of space that it prevented a planet from forming. And that's why we end up now with millions of fragments between Mars and Jupiter and other places in the solar system.
Okay, now, of course, astronomers spend their lifetime trying to catalog them, not just give them names and locations, but actually group them into clusters. So let's talk about some of them. First of all, we have what are called near-Earth objects, objects that are actually not that far from the planet Earth. How many of them are there, these near-Earth objects? Are they really dangerous, or are they simply a matter of science fiction as to whether or not one of them could hit the Earth?
Yes, well, there are different classes of near-Earth objects. Some of them have a very small number of members, and others have a very large number. Overall, there are certainly more than 100,000 that have been discovered, and depending on what size range you go down to, it will certainly be in the millions. The most prominent such asteroids are called Apollo asteroids. Now, as of very recently, we knew of just roughly 13,000 of them, but their total population is estimated at 80 million, the size of a house or larger. So the number that we know and the number that we theorize as actually existing is vastly different. So we can't see objects the size of a house with some exception, but certainly we know of the objects that are several miles or several kilometers across. We have almost entire 100% catalog of those objects. But as you get smaller and smaller, the equipment we have now, either in space or on the ground, is simply incapable of seeing those. So when you consider that there are 80 million objects that are crossing the orbit of the Earth, you can see that there's a distinct possibility of us getting hit by one of those.
Okay, now NASA, of course, tries to assure the public that there's no danger of us being hit by a big one within perhaps the next 100 years. However, when you start to talk about smaller objects, not a mile across, but maybe the size of a football field, you're beginning to see that there could be thousands, millions of these things. One of them is called Apophis. Could you explain what are the asteroids which really do pose a danger to the Earth, but on a scale of centuries, like the asteroid Apophis?
Yes, Apophis was just for people who want to look forward, on 13 April of 2029, Apophis is going to get very close to the Earth, only 33,000 kilometers away, that's 19,000 miles. And you won't need a telescope to see it. If estimates are correct, you won't even need binoculars to see it. It will be bright enough to see just with your eye looking up at the sky. So it's now the poster child for risky asteroid. But in that particular case, orbital calculations reveal it is not an imminent threat to Earth. Of course, we have the problem of chaos in the solar system. So we can't give an absolute definite prediction centuries into the future as to where an object is going to be. But Apophis is certainly the asteroid to look at now, because it's such an exciting find, and it was actually Mr. Tucker who discovered it back in 2004.
Now, this asteroid will actually go beneath some of our satellites. It'll come that close to the Earth. It'll actually skim the atmosphere of the Earth. And some people think that its orbit may be disturbed in an unpredictable way by friction as it skims the atmosphere of the Earth. And then it's going to return. I think, in 2036? And there are bets now that in 2036, its trajectory may be unknown because of the atmospheric disturbances on the 2029 pass. And some people are saying that perhaps on the third pass, it may actually hit the Earth. But what is the latest? What is the latest in terms of whether or not it poses a danger in the second pass and the third pass?
Well, as I said, it's impossible to determine because of not only the fact that there are chaotic gravitational forces out there, but also the influence of the atmosphere that you just mentioned. So, to my knowledge, no astronomer studying asteroids, the near-Earth asteroids in particular, is raising an alarm bell that we are going to be hit with any degree of probability in those years that you mentioned. It's going to be close, but I don't believe that anyone who studies this seriously believes that Apophis will impact the Earth any time in the foreseeable future, certainly not for centuries.
Okay, now let's talk about objects that actually hit the Earth in recorded history. Just a few years ago, in Chelyabinsk, Russia, there was a report of an object which actually caused damage and shattered windows as it hit the area near Chelyabinsk. And 100 years before that, we had another asteroid that hit Russia in Tunguska. Well, we'll talk about these near misses after the break. You are listening to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Give us a call, 612-564-8135. And maybe your question will be heard on 100 radio stations that carry Science Fantastic. Stay tuned.
For listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
NASA is expected to try and launch the Artemis 1 mission to the moon for a second time on Saturday. At Kennedy Space Center, Space Force Launch Weather Officer Melody Lovin says that there is a small risk of showers. She explains that this could cause their launch to be canceled as they don't want to risk a lightning strike.
Basically, if you think about it, we're sending a charged rod up into the sky. We've done half the work for the atmosphere already.
The G7 is agreeing to a price cap on Russian oil. It's an attempt to limit the country's profit from selling fuel as the third largest oil producer in the world. The Treasury Department sending out a statement from the Group of Advanced Global Economies confirming the cap, saying it wouldn't ship oil from Russia it sold at a higher price than the limit agreed to. You're listening to USA Radio News. Fed Reserve Chair Jerome Powell recently said that the labor market is out of balance and they intend to raise interest rates further to fight inflation. Appearing on Fox Business, Labor Secretary Marty Walsh says the August jobs report was pretty good overall.
Companies are still hiring. People are still, there's emerging industries, and then the legislature here in Washington and the president passed some significant piece of legislation that's going to only add to more jobs for our economy.
The White House is asking Congress for more than $22 billion in additional COVID funding. Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre saying it'll tackle pressing ongoing needs. That includes vaccines, testing, and treatments. Jean-Pierre saying will also cover research aimed at confronting future pandemics. Additionally, the White House is seeking more money for monkeypox, Ukraine, and natural disasters in the United States. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
Americans have the most colorful language in the world. And that vibrant language is our basis for thinking in big ways, new ways, efficient ways, and better ways. Americans have freedom of speech. The pairing of our colorful language and freedom of speech has made us the people and the nation that we are today. Imagine what it would be like not having the freedom to speak our minds, communicate our thoughts and ideas, and hear those from others. Americans have a passion for and yearn for the truth. There are those who want to destroy our freedom and right to hear the truth. The truth is under attack. GCN is under attack. I'm asking our fellow broadcasters and you to rise up and help us defend our right to free speech. Would you like to join us? Please consider visiting SaveGCN.com. Please help us bring you the truth 24 hours per day. I'm Vincent Finelli.
This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. With us today is an expert on the history of asteroids, Professor Clifford Cunningham, research fellow with the University of Southern Queensland in Australia. He's the associate editor of the Journal of Astronomical History and Heritage, and he's the author of a new book with the simple title, Asteroids. So today we're going to talk about what they are. Do they pose a danger? Will one day we be able to mine these asteroids? And what about a killer asteroid that has our name on it? When we last left off, we were talking about Russia, the fact that in the last 100 years or so, not one, but two gigantic meteorites struck Russia. They were perhaps roughly the size of an apartment building. Now, some people say that an asteroid bigger than a football field can in fact be tracked by our radar and our instruments, and so we don't have any reason to believe that there's going to be a catastrophic collision with them in the next 100 years, say. But let's now talk about things smaller than a football field. This object that hit Chelyabinsk a few years ago was not foreseen. It was not on anyone's radar screen, and there it was soaring over the landscape of Chelyabinsk, shattering windows and creating quite a commotion. So tell us a little bit about now, how dangerous are these objects, smaller than a football field, that are actually quite difficult to track, and they're about the size of, let's say, an apartment building. What are your thoughts?
Yes, well, it certainly is a danger. As I say, the telescopes, either in space or on the ground, are incapable of tracking objects the size of a house or smaller, and anything that size can certainly cause tremendous damage. The one for Chelyabinsk in particular, it's even featured on postage stamps now. It's so famous. Uruguay actually made a stamp in 2017 that has the Chelyabinsk meteor on it. Anything about the size of 50 to 80 meters across is really, really dangerous. The one that hit Russia in 1908 was approximately that size. It was most likely a stony asteroid, and it exploded with an energy 1,000 times greater than the bomb that hit Hiroshima in Japan, without the radiation, of course. But the effects were felt all over the world. The weather changed, and there was a huge devastation in that area of Siberia, but very few people killed because it was almost uninhabited. But certainly any object in the size of 140 meters or 460 feet could cause significant damage and possibly a tsunami. And it's objects of that size that we only know of a very few. So if anything that size could hit at any time, anywhere, and cause extraordinary devastation, possibly a million casualties.
Now let's talk about the big one, the one that people fear that could be, let's say, 6 miles across. And one of them actually hit the Yucatan of Mexico 66 million years ago, and it's believed that that could have wiped out the dinosaurs. So tell us a little bit about what is known about this object, comet or asteroid, that hit the Yucatan of Mexico and actually paved the way for the rise of mammals by destroying the dinosaurs. What do we know about that object?
Well, we know something about it because we've identified the site in Yucatan Peninsula. The hypothesis that the asteroid killed the dinosaurs and many, many other living creatures at the time was proposed by Dr. Luis Alvarez, and I was lucky enough to meet him, and he helped me write my first asteroid book back in 1988.
Okay, Clifford, we have to take another short commercial break, but afterwards we're going to talk about killer asteroids with our name on it. Our special guest today is Dr. Clifford Cunningham. The book is called Asteroids, and we're talking about perhaps one day we may encounter a killer rock in outer space. You are listening to Science Fantastic. Give us a call at 612-564-8135 if you want to get on national radio with your questions. Stay tuned.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of my lecture that tells you exactly how to do it. In fact, after you've lived a long and healthy life, there should be only two documents in your medical chart, a birth certificate and a death certificate. I'm Dr. Wallach with a warning. If you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol, high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, and other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. My free lecture is going to reveal what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. It's all in my free lecture called Deadly Recipe. So call toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. Again, that's toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. 1-855-79-YOUNG.
Do you experience fatigue when you know you should have energy? One reason fatigue can occur is due to a lack of antioxidants in the body. This deficiency happens the older we get, or due to eating an unhealthy diet, or even due to exercise. Your body's number one antioxidant is glutathione. When your cells are depleted of glutathione, you will be fatigued, inflamed, possibly depressed, and may also feel pain. Empirical results indicate that consuming green metal whey protein powder is the most effective means of increasing glutathione production. Green metal whey supplies nature's richest source of the precursor to making glutathione within the trillions of cells of your body. This protein strongly supports the cell's ability to make glutathione. Add to this that green metal whey also supports immunity, energy, lean muscle development, fat loss, and has anti-cancer properties, and you have nature's most complete and strongest superfood. To order, go to bestwayprotein.net. That's bestwayprotein.net. Or call 888-988-3325. That's 888-988-3325.
Let's face it, food shortages are a real threat now. Supply chain breakdowns, inflation, fuel prices, global conflicts, fertilizer cutbacks, farmers being encouraged not to plant. The stage is set for the peanut butter to hit the fan. But for some reason, Americans are still in denial about food shortages. Listen, we don't take risks with other things in our lives, so why take risks with your food security? Those who know what's coming are using today to prepare. Millions of Americans have purchased Ready Hour emergency food from My Patriot Supply, the brand people look for when they're ready for real preparedness. MyPatriotSupply.com is America's largest preparedness company. Get stocked up on emergency food that lasts up to 25 years in storage to get you through tough times ahead. Your other choice is to stand in government food lines hoping for a handout. As we both know, that's not an option. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com right now. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Brought to you by Professor Michio Kaku. This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. With us today is Dr. Clifford Cunningham, research fellow at the University of Southern Queensland in Australia. He's the associate editor of the Journal of Astronomical History and Heritage, and he's the author of a new book just hitting the stands right now called Asteroids. Well, now let's talk about the most famous asteroid of all, an object perhaps 6 miles across that plowed into the Yucatan of Mexico, gouging out a crater about 100 miles across, and in the process creating a tsunami, creating an atmospheric disturbance which we think wiped out the dinosaurs. And I understand that we've now actually been able to dredge fragments of that object from deep in the Gulf of Mexico waters. So tell us a little bit about this object. What do we know about it? And does it change our opinion of how dangerous these objects are?
Well, the discovery of that crater is of great importance, but the fact that its effects were felt worldwide is perhaps of even greater importance. The results just released in 2019 from a study in the United States in Montana, Wyoming, the Dakotas, has actually found debris from the actual day of impact 65 million years ago. You can actually see that the dinosaurs were still alive at that time. There was some controversy for years about whether the dinosaurs had already gone extinct. But we've actually been able to find microtectites at this site in the United States that still contain glass from the actual day of impact. And it's really a very exciting discovery. I think at this point it's regarded as the greatest discovery of the 21st century.
And how dangerous is a rock like that today? I mean, we track these things, right? But yeah. Some comets that are way out there are non-periodic. They don't obey a simple periodic orbit. And could they catch us by surprise? I read one article that if a non-periodic comet were to come from behind the sun, so we can't track it, and it has no tail, because let's say it's a quote virgin comet, it could actually hit the Earth without observation within about a month. We would have basically 1 month's warning that an object is headed toward the Earth, capable of wiping out all life on Earth. So how dangerous are these things? Or can we go to bed tonight realizing that they don't pose much of a danger?
Well, I wouldn't lose any sleep over it, considering all the other things that are going on in the world. But it's certainly a danger. In 2019, the administrator of NASA at the time was quoted as saying, dinosaurs did not have a space program, but we do, and we need to use it. So the U.S. Congress decided some years ago that we needed to track anything larger than 140 meters that was going to approach Earth on a potentially hazardous schedule. But the one you mentioned, of course, is the wild card, something that came out of left field, as they say. It might be a comet that we had not seen before that's been perturbed in its orbit from the far distant regions of the solar system that's approaching us from the sunward side, and we don't see it. So it is entirely possible, and 1 month warning is not enough. They do war games every year now in a different city around the world, using the most advanced computers and the greatest theories that we have on the orbits of objects and the composition of the asteroids to determine whether bombs could destroy them safely or not. The most recent war game, they sent up several kiloton detonators that did, in fact, destroy the asteroid, but one fragment survived. It was large enough, and it hit New York City, which was totally wiped out. So we simply don't have the technology to deal with it.
So some people think that, as you pointed out, if you blow up an asteroid, you have a lot of baby asteroids coming at you, which collectively can do more damage than just one big asteroid. Well, the Chinese recently announced that they're thinking about using some of their booster rockets to perhaps one day nudge or push an asteroid out of the way, perhaps with a nuclear weapon, not to destroy the asteroid, but to push it out of the way so it doesn't break apart into hundreds of fragments. So what do you thought about that idea? The idea that perhaps we can push one of these things out of the way. But let's take another short commercial break. And after the break, we're going to talk about killer asteroid scenarios. And one day, will we be able to mine the asteroid belt? Stay tuned. You're listening to Science Fantastic. Give us a call at 612-564-8135.
You don't sit behind a desk every day to earn a living. You're out and about making it happen. And sometimes you get a little bit behind on your paperwork, you know, like bookkeeping and paying your taxes. It's easy to get behind on paying your taxes. It happens to the best of us. And you know what happens next. The big bad IRS comes knocking on your door. And when that happens, you need to call the good old boys at the Tax Doctor. Let them do what they do best, deal and negotiate with the IRS so you pay the lowest you can in back taxes that the law allows. We are a 100% U.S.-based company, and we've saved our clients millions over the years in back taxes. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, call my friends right now at the Tax Doctor and learn more.
800-507-3137. 800-507-3137. 800-507-3137. That's 800-507-3137.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm about to give you a URL that can and will change your life. Simply investigate it and look into it for your own self. Do your own research. This is an absolute 360 win for GCN, for American Tax Solutions, and for you. Ladies and gentlemen, these are top tax lawyers that will deliver you super service very, very quickly and change your life. The average person can save up to 90% on their taxes. Visit GCNTaxCut.com. That's GCNTaxCut.com.
Extendivite really works. Here's just a few testimonials from Amazon. RL, 5 stars. Been taking this for 2 months now. I feel better. Have more energy. April, my husband started taking Extendivite, and he said he feels much better and has more energy. EW. Need to try. Everyone needs this for their health. Great product, great people. Josie. It works great. This product has made my blood pressure and cholesterol stable. I highly recommend it. JC, great product, has worked well these last few years. To get your Extendivite today, go to extendivite.com. That's extendovite.com or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
You've seen crazy diets to lose weight. At GCN Team, our healthy body weight loss system simply neutralizes the body, bringing down cravings. It has been proven that nutritional deficiencies drive appetite for carbs, sugars, and fats. Lose weight the easy way. Find us at GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. Fighting cravings is a fool's game. Give the body what it needs to be satisfied. Again, 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.
This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. With us today is Dr. Clifford Cunningham. He's a research fellow at the University of Southern Queensland in Australia. And he's the associate editor of the Journal of Astronomical History and Heritage. And we're talking about asteroids. Well, if you saw the movie Armageddon, you know that Bruce Willis can have a nuclear bomb to blow one of these things up. Some people say that's the worst possible scenario because then you have a lot of baby asteroids and comets coming your way. The Chinese just announced that they're thinking of building a rocket that one day may nudge an asteroid out of the way when it's still far away so that you can actually change its trajectory. Some people think that maybe the gravity of the rocket would be enough to nudge it out of the way. But, well, what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts about what we should do if one day we find that there is a big one headed our way? What do we do?
Well, I'm amazed that after all these decades of thinking about this, that so little has been done. I've been attending conferences on the mitigation of asteroid impacts since the 1980s, and the ideas that were promoted then are the same ideas that are being discussed today, including the one you mentioned with regard to China. The fact that we're now in a position to begin really creating these spacecraft that might be able to do this over the next few years is the only real advance. The concepts involved really haven't changed over the last 30 years or more. Simulations show that with 5 or more years advance warning of an impact, the best course is to send out scout spacecraft, gather more data on the object, and then follow that by a projectile fired from Earth. Now, whether that's a projectile to explode it or a projectile to nudge it is a question. Between 2 and 5 years, the most likely successful option is a single scout followed by a projectile, and at 1 year or less, no option exists to stop the object from hitting the Earth.
Now, my understanding is that we are a sitting duck. We are defenseless, absolutely defenseless. Look at the space shuttle. The space shuttle was canceled. But even if we had a space shuttle, it cannot reach deep space. The bulk of our rockets can basically spin around the planet Earth. They are not equipped to go into deep space, like in the movies, in order to intercept an asteroid. In other words, we're a sitting duck. Well, let's change gears a little bit now and talk about the fact that Google billionaires have created a company that will one day perhaps mine an asteroid. That's right. Mine an asteroid for valuable rare earths, for platinum-based minerals, and you'll become a billionaire if you can retrieve an asteroid from space. So, well, what are your thoughts about whether or not there is a gold mine in outer space if we can mine the asteroid belt? What are your thoughts?
Well, it's interesting that you use the word gold, because that's the word that's been used with regard to asteroids for more than a century in science fiction. People have thought of them as
gold mines, literally, because they might actually be composed of gold. We have no specific evidence that there are asteroids made of gold out there, but it's been a harbinger of things to come from science fiction, going all the way back to Tsiolkovsky in the 1890s and the early 1900s, talking about the possibility of mining asteroids. And I think mining asteroids is a very major element of the future exploration of the solar system, because we can't take the materials we need from the Earth and get out of the gravity well of the planet and take them into space. We have to mine objects that are already out there and then refine them and use them to build other spacecraft and possibly objects that we can actually live in, space colonies or spacecraft that will go to other stars. So the possibility of human exploration of the not just the solar system, but the stars may actually depend on us mining the asteroids or the raw materials we need to explore more of our galaxy.
Well, you know, back in the early 1800s, President Thomas Jefferson, who signed the Louisiana Purchase, basically doubling the size of the United States of America in the early 1800s, he wrote a letter despairing of the fact that it would take 1,000 years to colonize the West. North America was so big, with so much wilderness, 1,000 years, he said, it would take to colonize the West. Well, a few years after that, gold was discovered in California. The gold rush was on, and instead of taking a few thousand years, it just took a few decades to colonize California. Now, some people believe that there could be another gold rush with platinum, rare earth elements being used in Silicon Valley, for example. Rare earth elements that are found, we think, in asteroids, because these elements sunk to the center of the Earth when the Earth was being formed. Therefore, the concentration of these platinum-based elements is rather low on the surface of the Earth. But asteroids didn't have that because they are, quote, a failed planet. So what are your thoughts about the fact that if we can show the composition of these asteroids have platinum elements, rare Earth elements, that in principle, perhaps it could pay for itself? But, well, what are your thoughts? You began mentioning this. What are your thoughts?
Yes, I think it's highly likely in the long term. I don't think it's going to be financially viable in the next 15 or 20 years, but certainly the beginning of asteroid mining actually has already started. In the year 2019, the Hayabusa 2 spacecraft fired a high-speed projectile into an asteroid named Ryugu, and this shoot-and-collect method is one option for space mining. So the idea is you hit an asteroid with a projectile, all sorts of material gets injected into space, you collect it, and then refine it. And,
okay,
take whatever you
well, need. Dr. Cunningham, unfortunately we have run out of time, but thank you so much for being on Science Fantastic. Once again, our special guest today has been Dr. Clifford Cunningham, research fellow with the University of Southern Queensland in Australia, author of a book called Asteroids, and he's the editor of the Journal of Astronomical History and Heritage. And you are listening to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Tune in every week as we discuss the cutting edge of science and technology. The number to call is 612-564-8135. Call us and get on National Radio.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com, or call us at 818-984-6100, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time.
That's 818-984-6100. ShopSuperT.com.